The Around the NFL Podcast will never die.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, and I mean it, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
All right. Happy Wednesday to everybody. Wes, I was just going through my tweets for a little exercise that we're going to do in a few minutes, but I did tweet yesterday on the conversation of all our dad rock talk on Wednesday show that I overheard someone in the newsroom got engaged at a Third Eye Blind concert. And then two smart Alex, I'll call them, replied, "Was it Wes?"
Congrats Wes.
And you replied one word, blocked. I'm legitimately curious. Did you actually block those people?
No, I was just having fun with them. I did not block them. I understood that they were only having fun with me. Sometimes you just got to let people pick on you.
Okay. All right. I was legitimately curious if how deep your blocking vengeance goes.
Well, I think it'd be fair if you found out someone that you follow got engaged at a Third Eye Blind concert. That is worthy of blocking them.
I agree with that. Mm.
Got engaged during the current incarnation of Third Eye Blind or way back in like 1997? That would have been the low.
I can say this because I don't know who this is. So
a recent engagement.
Hitting out blindly.
Third Eye Blind has a weird career arc that they are kind of a one-album wonder from 1998, but then they caught another wave of popularity, especially with younger people, to the point where they're selling out the Hollywood Bowl currently.
Good
it's a very
them.
Strange situation with Third Eye.
I mean, our show could take the same exact trajectory.
That'd be cool. On the subject of all our dad rock conversation and Chance the Rapper, Mark, which gives us our bona fides, you know, we're cool too.
I listened. I told you that I would, instead of just critiquing him on the last show, which was a little bit, you know, premature, I went and listened to quite a bit of his library or some of it. And
four songs, probably. Five songs.
Like him a lot.
Chance. All right. Hey, here's some tweets. People have their own opinions. Okay. Sam Shepard tweets, "Aaron Rodgers equals Oasis. Came out huge with everyone waiting for the follow-up, but can't get over fighting with family members."
It's a terrible, terrible comparison.
Is this Sam Shepard?
I mean, Aaron Rodgers had the best season, you know, maybe any quarterback's had years after his first Super Bowl.
Win a title.
Isn't Sam Shepard the one-armed man?
Sam Shepard, the actor / playwright?
Is that a fugitive joke?
Yeah, I think wasn't that his name, Sam Shepard?
Maybe, because it did ring a bell there. I think Harrison Ford, I don't know the television show. That's probably what you grew up with.
Based on one of the great true crime stories of American history.
The Fugitive is my favorite movie of the 90s other than Shawshank Redemption. I love The Fugitive. What a movie. Tommy Lee Jones. Harrison Ford.
I've never seen The Fugitive.
Pulp Fiction.
Really?
Got to check that out.
Please see it. And Tropic Thunder. I still have the DVD in my drawer waiting for you to borrow it.
Remember, Greg was born as a 30-something about
32
years
old.
Ago,
so. Came out of the birth canal, a fully formed 32-year-old man.
So why would he have seen The Fugitive?
It makes total sense.
This doesn't even make any sense. What? Like, I've seen just as many movies. Give me a break.
Here's another one. Eli is Jacob Dylan. Two hits and a lot of credit for it, but a lot of credit for his last name. This doesn't make Peyton Bob. Okay. Lousy Husband is the name of that Twitter handle.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Andy Georgian writes, "Joe Flacco is Limp Bizkit. Tough to believe it ever happened." It's fair. Andy has another one. Might be a music fan. He's from Ohio. "Steve Young is Fish. Wild improv, but living in a much better shadow. Montana / Huey Lewis."
He's in the Huey Lewis
show. I think he was knocking down to some degree the idea that Steve Young was the Grateful Dead, that he would have been.
Right.
It makes sense.
The Huey Lewis bit.
I don't get that part.
Well, I think they were friends, actually.
All right.
Anyway. Andy, again. Troy Aikman and the Triplets are Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Talent, but nothing without the whole package. I disagree on that. Tom Petty had some very big moments as a solo artist as well, even with some help from outside Heartbreakers. Let's see.
She's also in the Traveling Wilburys.
Yes. CB, At Corey Bach. Tom Brady is Kanye, both loved and hated, but no doubt the greatest.
Mm.
I like that. This is
I don't know about no doubt there, but I like that his, you know, what people think of Kanye and Brady tends to change every 2 or 3 years.
Yes.
He can be hated, he can be loved, he can be all sorts of
I'm content with Tom Brady as the Beatles.
The Romantic Jaguar at Jack Payne 93. Eli Manning equals Janet Jackson. Now I like that, which makes Peyton Michael. We'll talk
give me a break. That's Janet Jackson's way better than Eli Manning.
Yeah. Janet Jackson stands on her own for some great albums.
Yeah, unlike Eli.
Yeah.
Cannot stand on his own.
Right.
15-year NFL starter, franchise quarterback with 2 Super Bowl MVPs. Can't stand on his own.
Average quarterback for 15 years.
One day, guys, you'll come around on this.
We're
Josh Clark.
Out of time.
Sanchez equals Spinal Tap. A lot of laughs, but not a real QB. That we're having fun.
That was my favorite.
Alex Ray, I think Eli is Coldplay if Peyton is U2. Wants to be U2, but isn't. That's fair. Tom Savage comp is The Wonders. That's
Tom Savage is real.
That thing you do, the Tom Hanks directed picture.
I love that movie.
Yeah, great movie. Came out of nowhere to popularity, not real. So fun, a fun little exercise. Finally, Bill Goodell writes, you can check Dad Rock Podcast off the list. Don't need to do it because we already did.
Thanks, Bill Goodell.
All right, today's show, which of course is I almost said sponsored, which it is not.
You guys think that's Roger's brother? Would be worried about his older brother, Bill, not happy with their podcast?
I don't think the older brother has any concept the show exists.
Nor does the younger brother.
Let's keep an eye on this Twitter handle, though, just in case. The Around the NFL podcast is driven by Hyundai, which rhymes with Sunday. And on today's show, we will have some news to get to. We are what? What are we, 2 weeks away from the draft now?
That's correct.
2 weeks.
And a day.
April 27th to 29th in Philadelphia. And this year, it's outdoors.
Sell it, baby.
Don't pretend like you care at all. Wes.
Sell it, baby.
It could be 28 degrees. It could be 62 degrees. You never know.
Vest that pension, Wes.
Oh, yeah.
No, but it's a fair point by Wes because normally, it's just names being written off a card. But this time, it's names being written off a card.
Outdoors! Oh, yeah.
They've done it outdoors before.
But not all.
Not the entire draft.
100%, bruh. Outdoors.
All right. Should be sponsored by Patagonia.
And on the subject of the first ever all outdoor draft, you know, it could rain, by the way. I don't want to throw it out there, but there's a little.
It's like having a wedding.
It's a little sexy. It's a little sexy. There's a little risk involved.
Late April in Philadelphia, that could be anything.
A little bit of a wild card.
We are the first to tell you that we might not present ourselves or believe ourselves to be draft experts, but now we're all starting to plug in a little bit because it's becoming a part of our world very quickly. So we're going to talk about what are the draft fits that we want to see as fans of NFL football after coming off a 2016 season, you know, have a good kind of handle on what those teams maybe were lacking last year, what's happened in free agency, have holes been filled, what's been addressed, what hasn't been. What do you want to see? Mark, I think you got opinions on this one, and I'm looking forward to it.
I have one.
A single opinion, but a strong one.
Correct.
They won't say you're on the fence after this opinion is shared.
Nope. Yes,
that's a tease, baby. And if we have time, we'll have a guest swing by. So that's Wednesday's show, and let's get to the news. Wonderful, La Seed.
It's all the news that's fit to make up.
That's fair. That was Andrew Siciliano speaking to us during one of our NFL Network hits. Greg, you want to tell the people about our NFL Network
duties? We've been on daily this week on Up to the Minute Live, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. We're usually on about 5:40 to 5:50 or so is when.
I mean, if you got up to get an orange and even started peeling it, you'd miss it. So you have to be locked into the chair. It's about two and a half minutes long.
All right, let's. Oh, Kevin Patcher wrote it in his lead for this story we're about to talk about, so we might as well heed his call. Sound the trope alarm, Lasid.
Trope alert. Trope alert. Trope alert.
Every year.
Trope alert. Trope alert.
There's some team or some player on a team that starts popping off about the Patriots. This week, it's Miami Dolphins wide receiver Jarvis Landry, who told a crowd in London this week that the Miami Dolphins will sweep the New England Patriots in the 2017 regular season. Every division, in division, you play each other twice, two wins, home and away, coming for the Dolphins over the Pats. He then expanded on those comments to Peter King. Here's his quote. "If you're a competitor, that's the way you should feel, and I don't mind saying it. It's time for a change. I have all the respect in the world for the Patriots, and I respect Tom Brady tremendously, but they're not our big brother anymore." Let's dissect that, starting with the man that resides on the throne of ease, Greg Rosenthal.
I mean, it's the right attitude. Doesn't really mean anything. Rex Ryan thought talking in public like we're not afraid of those big bad bullies was going to make a difference. I did like the fact, though, when Landry said Coach Gase flipped the switch with us. New England's won the division 14 of the last 16 years. It's ridiculous. It's a problem. I kind of like that Coach Adam Gase is bringing this up to the Dolphins. Don't hide from it, that this is ridiculous. We can't just ignore it. We need to do something about it.
I mean, I get it. Your quarterback isn't much of a leader. He doesn't say much. So you've got to take the bull by the horn.
As a coach, you mean? Or Landry?
Ryan Tannehill is not much of a leader for the Dolphins, so I get that Jarvis Landry is stepping into that vacuum.
Got it.
And getting everyone to kind of get on the same page with Adam Gase, that this is the tone we're setting. But give me a break. The Dolphins are always April's champions. And then let's hear Jarvis Landry say the same thing the week before he plays the Patriots.
I agree with that. And though, I mean, there has been positive buzz from Dolphins players toward Adam Gase from the minute he got there. And last year, I think, at least showed that of the rest of the teams in that ridiculous division, the Dolphins are one step ahead of the Bills and the Jets, if not many more steps, towards challenging New England. But when you finish your opening quote with, "but they're not our big brother anymore," how about you go sweep them, and then the next season you go sweep them again, and then you do it a third time, then you talk about who the big brother is.
Win a Super Bowl, too.
Good for you!
Win a Super Bowl, too.
I mean, that's, you know? I'm fine to be a competitor. We get what you're saying with that part of it. You're thinking one way, but you know this is going to be rattled around a slow April period, make headlines everywhere. What is the point of it?
I actually don't have a big problem with the quote till the part that got on your radar, Mark. The big brother line, you're certainly little brother, just like every other team in the division is, until
you're not even siblings.
Changes, yeah.
Right. You're the little kid
cousins.
Down the block who's not good at football.
Exactly. And that's where it got on my radar. I mean, that's what I've been calling for a year and a half now, hashtag save football. It is indeed time for a change. But I don't know if the Dolphins are the team to make that happen.
I mean, ironically, the Dolphins have given the Patriots more trouble over Bill Belichick's run than any team in terms of head-to-head matchups. They don't win the division, but they split with them three straight years. You know, Joe Philbin split with them three straight years. So this is a team that going down to Miami has given them a little trouble over the years. And I think what Landry said is true about some teams. He said, sometimes we focus on the guys on the other side of the line instead of just focusing on us. And we've heard that coaches especially sometimes get a little crazy when they play Belichick. They try to outsmart.
But wait, we were just giving them credit for saying that
they're
focusing on New England.
They're obsessing over the Patriots.
That's a good point.
The very fact that you're calling them your big brother, you don't hear the Patriots talk. The Patriots are Dan's Draper scene. They don't think about the Dolphins at all.
Yeah, let's hear Don, actually.
I don't think about you at all.
And Greg, you know what? That's not fair. You can't even give me that. The Jets went into Foxborough in a playoff game and beat your Patriots. At least give me – and they almost always play them tight. The Jets at least have put up a fight against the Patriots.
Absolutely, but it's a fact that Miami has won –
nod.
If you go look, the Miami has won more games against Bill Belichick and a higher winning percentage than any team in the division by far.
But we got to play
them. They beat him a lot. For whatever reason, it's happened that way.
And by the way, Rex Ryan said the – we didn't come here.
You got a playoff win. That's pretty good against a number one seed. That's pretty great.
That's what I mean. 14-2. That's Brady was the MVP.
Nearly a decade ago at this point.
A long time ago. January 2009 was when Rex Ryan made the kiss the rings comment. So it is now April 2017, and there's still jabronis making these type of comments for the Patriots. And in 2009, the Patriots had been dominant for a decade. Enough. He's right.
I mean, it is funny because since he's made that comment, the Patriots have not lost the division once.
All right. Speaking of the Dolphins, a former Dolphin is Deion Jordan, one of the great draft busts in the history of the franchise. He is heading back to the Pacific Northwest, trying to get a fresh start here. The former number three overall pick agreed to terms on Tuesday with the Seattle Seahawks. Rap Sheet reported, USA Today had it first. Jordan was waived by the Miami What's a fortnight?
It's like two weeks.
14 days.
Only used actually now in reference to Wimbledon. That's like the only time people ever use the word fortnight, I feel.
Patra,
I spent like 13 years fortnight. Thinking it was 10 days. And
Patra is a major grinder for the NFL.com team. He used fortnight in this post.
It's one of Patra's totally go-to off. Words.
Yeah. Anyway, so Deion Jordan, Wes, starts over in Seattle. Is he going to be on the team in week one?
I don't know. Like, we were in a meeting, and Greg said they're planning on starting him. Give me a break.
No, I said he has a chance to take the Bruce Irvin job. That's like how
break.
They see him, which makes sense. He's kind of that
Give me
system.
A break. Let's see if he can actually get through training camp before we say he has a chance to start. I don't think that roster composition by way of getting as many players from the 2013 draft is really a great idea.
Well, that is what interested me about this. And – he could fit in that role. If someone can get some defensive talent out of him, it would be Pete Carroll. But that they have Luke Jokel, huge bust at now at left tackle, making a lot of money, who is the number two pick. And Arthur Brown, a second-round pick of the Ravens, who had a lot of hype, he's on the Seahawks now. And Eddie Lacy, of course, now with the Seahawks.
It was very tiresome when the Deion Jordan thing happened. And I just essentially turned off Twitter for like 8 or 9 hours in a row on these April work days. But there was this bubbling up of what a high-value job by the Seahawks to get Deion Jordan. What are you talking about? I mean, the guy was an absolute headache and a minus for the Dolphins. It's one of these players that you're essentially rehabbing from the neck up or the neck down the entire time he's in your organization. And maybe it does work out for Seattle, but there's no known quantity at all here.
I mean,
it's a ghost.
If you're rehabbing him from the neck up and the neck down, that
well,
pretty,
it's absolutely covered. It's absolutely true.
That covers the whole
thing. You're dealing with on the field issues and you're dealing with off the field issues. It's the full Monty.
Like the middle of his neck.
That part's
they're
fine.
Not touching. They love
part's fine.
Like the esophagus and then the circumference of the neck before you get to the base of the skull and then the clavicle. they love that part.
That part's good. That probably is what got him this job.
Moving on, Doug Martin. Hey, this is interesting. At the NFL Scouting Combine early last month, General Manager Jason Lick.
Light.
Oh, excuse me. I like Lick. Why doesn't it just go Lick?
Save that for a sound drop, Sydney.
Jason Light, excuse me. And Dirk Cutter. They did not say, hey, we can't wait to have Doug Martin part of our team. That is not what we heard coming out of Indy. He seemed to be very much up in the air. Martin, of course, who suspended, went to rehab. But it sounds like a second chance is coming. Chris Wessling, the veteran running back, expected to rejoin teammates for the start of offseason workouts next Monday. Rap Sheet reported via a source close to the situation. Wes, your thoughts on this, and are you happy to see this? You think this is something that could be salvaged?
Well, we've been wondering for 4 months whether he was even going to be on a team. When he got suspended, the guaranteed portion of the 5-year, $36 million contract he signed last March was nullified. So the Bucks could just easily cut ties with him. Instead, they've kept him along. I texted Rap Sheet about this.
Humble brag.
He told me Martin is doing amazing.
Name drop.
He also said that Doug Martin at this point he's a low risk. He's not going to burn a roster spot because he's suspended, so they can keep him on the roster. And worst-case scenario, you draft another running back early in the draft and Doug Martin helps out in the backfield. Best-case scenario, he really comes through all of this with flying colors, stays committed, and you saddle him up and maybe he does what he did in 2015.
This is one of the more bizarre running back careers of late. Two 1,400-yard-plus seasons in 3 seasons – under 500 because of injuries and, again, because of off-the-field stuff. He's all over the map.
Well, it sounds like, and we didn't know this about Doug Martin, but when this suspension for PEDs, but then there was also a substance abuse element where he went to rehab, came up, there was a lot of like, oh, yeah, everyone kind of, you know, behind the scenes knew that Doug Martin had some questions of motivation and struggles perhaps with substance abuse. So who knows? It makes sense to give him a shot, but he's also due $7 million. So even if he's going to make the team, he has to look incredible to get that money. You would think that they would redo his deal at some point, even if he does look good. But I think he's got to prove to them that he's worth doing that for.
Moving on. Mark, we're going to duck in to the end round, see what's going on over there. Is that cool with you?
Let's find out.
That's
a vote of confidence.
That's on the fence.
Well, I know where these things usually take us.
What does that mean?
There's a particular sound drop that I despise. And it's probably.
All right.
I had nothing
to do
with
that. This invariably will be about something that you've done. Let's see how this goes.
You really just walked right into that.
I did. That was not good job on my part.
That I have no reporting today. There's nothing to break.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
No, but I'm saying, like, you set that up yourself.
Again, I'm not proud that happened. That went very poorly.
A lot of jealousy about the insider. It's something you can all do. It's just a matter of
I'm waiting how do you wanna... to see an insider.
I'm proud of you, Dan.
Were you?
Oh, Wes.
I was reading the big Tom Brady jersey story in the MMQB, and they've got Dan Hansis in there.
Well, I was going to say, are you a little worried that they came out with this huge, detailed, long form, you know, breaking some new stuff on your story? Supposedly your story.
What do you mean, supposedly?
Well, they're the ones that are coming out with the long.
If you got mentioned in it, I think that's. Yeah. I'm sticking up for you. I think you're obviously embedded in the story.
Nice try.
Like they had little tidbits. Like the guy who stole the jersey is a huge NFL fan who recently purchased. They went through his purchases a Mark Sanchez Jets replica jersey.
No, he's.
So wasn't
he
that
sold? I believe he sold it to the dude.
This guy isn't into buying jerseys, Greg. Yeah.
The story is he sold. a Sanchez replica jersey, signed jersey, actually a game used jersey, I think, to this dude in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
And then they were going back and forth, and the dude's like, by the way, if you're interested, Mr. Harry Patriot fan, I have Tom Brady's Super Bowl 49 jersey. And then this guy put it together. He's like, wait, because it had come out later that the 49 jersey was missing. I guess once it came to light that was also stolen. This guy put it together, and he contacted the FBI. It's a crazy story.
Good job by him. Good job by Klemko.
How much money is a Mark Sanchez jersey commanding on the black market?
That's a very strange purchase. But you got to get – Mark Sanchez has Mexican heritage.
I get that.
Maybe that's why.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Tom Brady has the number one selling jersey still.
I saw that on your Instagram. I agree with you. That was a ridiculous top 25 list.
What are we doing here? If you're a Patriots fan and the type of Patriots fans that buys merch, you have to already have multiple Tom Brady jerseys or at least one.
Yeah, but when your team has been good for 20-something years, there are now a fresh round of 4,
that's
5, 6, and 7-year-olds that don't have football jerseys.
A lot of kids.
Just wait till the grandkids of the people buying jerseys now are still buying them because Tom Brady's still in his prime in 20 years.
I mean, I'm just saying, it's surprising to me.
They're picking up even more bandwagon kind of national fans.
I get why it's frustrating to you.
I mean, it should be frustrating to everybody. It's so tired. This whole thing is tired, this Patriots.
Gronk is number 5 on the list.
Here is the top 5. Tom Brady, and then back-to-back Cowboys, which should never be surprising, but especially this year. And I would have thought one of these guys would have been number 1. Ezekiel Elliott, then Dak Prescott. Odell Beckham Jr., who we'll get to a little bit more in a second. And then Gronk at number 5. And some fun facts about the jerseys. Everybody likes fun facts, right? Fun facts are fun. That's why they call them fun facts. Buying time over here.
You're going to provide some.
No one's helping you out.
No. Good job, guys. Here we go. And you still have an opportunity. Anybody could say anything they want right now about football or life while I'm looking for something.
I would not purchase a jersey right now if someone were to give it to me for $5.
Yeah, neither. Well...
No interest. You can. I would assume Wes would not either. Well,
if I could get a jersey for $5 and I knew someone would probably want.
Minus the regifting aspect.
I don't want to say anything bad about my employer, but no, I'm not carrying much respect for grown men walking around with jerseys.
Yeah,
it starts to look a little strange. I don't want to S on anybody that listens to the podcast that's an adult that wears the jersey, but not everybody pulls it off, and some people pull it off.
I mean, I get it. You only wear it going to the game.
I think that's fine.
That's fine.
I am fine with that at a stadium and stuff, sure.
But don't wear it to a christening. You know what I mean? Like,
especially there.
You know, don't wear it, you're going out to the bar with your buddies, and you're not going to watch the game. It's like May, and you're going to watch the Cubs. You know, don't wear your Alshon Jeffrey jersey to the bar.
Even if your name's Jeffrey.
Yeah. Plus, your Alshon Jeffrey jersey really has no use anymore in Chicago.
Right.
Don't show up with your Tony Romo Mavericks jersey.
By the way, those, I'm going to talk about cash grabs. Those were sold for like $100 at the Dallas Mavericks arena for that whole situation on Tuesday where he sat on the bench. Sold out every Romo-related merch there. Everything sold.
Mark Cuban knows how to
make idea.
Money.
A good idea.
Anyway, three Patriots in the total in the top 25. Brady, Gronk, as I told you. Julian Edelman came in, I think, at 15, which is pretty crazy, too. But and zero representatives from the other three AFC East teams. You could it's a pretty accurate summation of the state of that division. Defense may win championships. It's not really true. Offense drives commerce. Only four of the top 25 top jersey sellers play. Defense, none in the top 10. Von Miller at 11 was the highest. And a shout-out to J.J. Watt, who gives some heat around here. But hanging in the top 25, despite basically not playing last year, that's pretty good. I want to throw some shade at three states in the union. Okay?
All right.
Brady.
The original union? Or
the entire union. Okay. This is the State of the Union address on jerseys. More Brady fun. He was a top seller in all the New England states. Makes sense. But he also finished first in Nevada, Utah, Hawaii, Michigan, Illinois, and Florida. Hmm. Okay, those first three states, they don't have an NFL team. At least none of them do yet. But the last three. Michigan. Okay, Michigan.
He went
there, blah, blah, blah. But Illinois and Florida. Guys.
Florida, a lot of transplants.
Come on. Come back to it.
That's a little embarrassing. You got three
teams.
You got three NFL teams.
Florida. Florida.
Have you seen those three teams lately?
How is Florida? Grandparents buying their grandchildren online sales from Florida are simply gifts going somewhere else in the country, Patriots jerseys for kids somewhere else.
Is that how this works?
Snowbird factor.
Well, it's not necessarily, it's just store-bought. I think it's where, like, if you – I'm not involved in this industry, but, like, where you're, you know – your computer's coming out of what city, what town, what region? That would be sales for Florida, not some other state.
Yeah. Looking for the next face of the NFL. Keep an eye on Dak Prescott, who had the best-selling jersey in 9 states, including Maryland and Tennessee. How about that?
But there's a bunch of people out there that aren't fans of a certain team at all. They just love a player and they love the Cowboys colors. Raiders jerseys have sold uniformly across the country for years, and it's not all because of these people are hardcore Raiders fans.
Moving on. One other end around Tibbet. Odell Beckham sent out an Instagram on Wednesday of a new tattoo. It covers basically from above his ankle, his right ankle, all the way up to right beneath his knee, so the entire span of his calf. Exquisitely rendered of Michael Jackson. It looks like Michael Jackson circa 1984 range around the Thriller album with a comment tatted on me, but that ish is deeper than the surface. Now, I have a theory on this, but Mark, I'll start with you. What do you think Odell Beckham means when he writes tatted on me, but that ish is deeper than the surface?
Well, I was saying the image is on my skin, but my feelings for Michael Jackson since I was very young, they come from – he's affected my heart. I love Michael Jackson, Odell Beckham is saying.
That's true.
That's pretty good.
That's very good. And that's kind of what I wrote about.
There's an ego factor at work here too.
Go on, Wes.
No doubt.
Well, he sees a lot of similarities between himself. He identifies
right
with Michael Jackson.
Yeah, that's what I hit at, that – He sees a lot of himself. He was a once in a generation talent, universally praised for his gifts, but relentlessly scrutinized by the public and press. That checks out. On a lower level, though, Michael Jackson was one of the most famous people in the entire world.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe the most famous person in the world. Beckham can exhibit odd behavior at times and feels that he's misunderstood.
Unlike Michael Jackson.
Certainly was that way. And, you know, I get it. The guy that has it all. Jackson obviously had some demons.
He sees a different man in the mirror. He sees Michael Jackson.
Well done, Mark. Yeah, that was very nicely done. Oh, by the way. Let's hear some Michael Jackson music.
Let's do it.
Right now, if you are, and there are some kids out there listening to the show, MJ hasn't had a number one hit in 21 years. I looked at 22 years.
Wow.
Almost 8 years since his death. So you might not even be familiar with the King of Pop. Here is Michael Jackson, or a facsimile of Michael Jackson. Let's hear it. I'd like to know if I could make it up. Turn this up, please. See, he was just a master of the groove, but also you could hear that vocal acrobatics.
It's like a facsimile of Keith Sweat or something.
All right.
A lot of lovemaking going on after listening to that. You know, they have whole Super Bowl babies commercial.
No,
they're going to have the Around the NFL podcast April 12th episode commercial.
Nobody was asking for that analysis, Greg.
That was a turn back the clock to, what was it, Seduction Fridays?
Yeah, I remember Seduction Fridays. I don't remember what our Stitcher looks like, though. and that's it. And finally in the news, Jeff Cumberland.
Cumby,
my boy. He signed a deal. I believe with the Chargers, they brought him back. Resigns with the Chargers, blew his Achilles last year. Last time he was in the news, the former Jets tight end was getting booed at the Staples Center shortly after the Chargers announced their move to Los Angeles.
It's been a rough ride.
I believe at a Kings game or something really strange. Maybe it was Clippers, but very strange.
Yeah.
Cumby, one of your all-time favorites. That's why he makes the show.
Yeah, he would not make the show.
Great guy, too.
He was a rigidly, and this will tie back into something later on in the show today, a rigidly middling tight end, but he occasionally made a play and, frankly, probably was the most productive tight end the Jets have had in 5 years, or at least since Dustin Keller went bye-bye, and that is a dark, dark situation. That's what's happening in the news. All right, here we go. Let's talk about, well, you know what we're going to talk about. I'm going to talk about how we can elevate your underwear game to the next level. You know what I'm saying, Sid?
Play some of that music.
With MeUndies. What is MeUndies? Oh, just seriously soft, feel good. What was the guy, Orson Welles. Oh, do we still have that?
Ah, the French champagne.
You don't? Oh, just seriously soft, feel-good undies delivered right to your door. MeUndies are designed in L.A. and made from sustainably sourced micro...
Modal.
A fabric 3 times softer than cotton. MeUndies, softer than soft. Lugs undies come in an ever-changing selection of classic colors, bold shades, and adventurous patterns, so you can tailor your undies to your own personal style. And guess what?
What?
You can save time and money each month with a monthly subscription. And if you're not ready for a subscription, that's okay. You can still save. That's because MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first pair. Just use our special URL, MeUndies.com/NFL2017, and get 20% off your first pair. So go ahead, revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. Once again, that's MeUndies.com/NFL2017, MeUndies.com/NFL2017. 2017. Still not an individualized offer code.
102, take two.
Ah, the French champagne.
All right.
I think we got to get some of that MJ Light music underneath that commercial. That feels a little more.
Planning to wear my MeUndies for the video show tomorrow. Not with nothing else on, but I'm
nice.
Saying underneath the rest of my work clothes.
Also, they're doing a photo shoot for the podcast tomorrow, so everybody. Wes, you might want to put the flannel away tomorrow because the cameras are coming out.
Flannel.
Oh, excuse me. The plaid.
Plaid looks good on you, though.
Yeah, but he's got a paramour in his life that will not want that. I was told by the head of photography at NFL Media that, you know, be ready for the cameras to be there because these pictures could end up on a wall at NFL Network.
So what are you wearing?
I don't know. Daddy might have to hit up Banana Republic. Might have to get a new shirt. Certainly need one. Maybe this is the occasion.
I mean, I've got about 5 or 6 to choose from, like most of us in here. So it's not going to be that spectacular. You're going to Banana Republic to buy a shirt for this.
Might go to BR. But Wes is the one to keep an eye on here because Wes has the man cannon to choose from. You have several of these shirts, these plaid shirts. You have the shirts that your paramour kind of put on you, if you will.
Yeah, I used to have my own style. Now it's borrowed.
So maybe, all right, this will be, aren't you guys interested? It almost will be a peek into where Wes's relationship is, what shirt he'll be wearing tomorrow.
I would say that this shirt might be the most loathed shirt in my collection, according to the paramour.
It's a great shirt.
I like the shirt.
I like it, too.
I think it's Wes.
We're going to tweet it out.
Okay, here we go. What are the draft fits you want to see is the talking point right now. The draft is a couple of weeks away, so let's go around and talk about it. Chris, I'm going to start with you, actually. Mm-hmm. I want to hear the man in the orange plaid shirt, what he has to say. What is a draft fit that he would love to see in 2017?
Well, we talked about this on Network Hit Tuesday about the 2004 draft class. Philip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning. Wouldn't it be smart for all of those teams, and in my opinion, especially the Giants, to get a quarterback in a draft where the best quarterbacks are expected to fall because they're not going to be ready for a year or 2 or 3 years? So I think I would like to see Patrick Mahomes on the New York Giants. That would be a fit that I like.
I think Mahomes, and yeah, we don't dig into tons of draft stuff, draft prospects, but his name's been rising steadily, and he's an interesting guy, super strong arm. I think any team that needs a quarterback, if you wasn't one of those top 5 picks and you ran into him, it would be very interesting. The Giants, I could see the fit. I don't know if they need to go invest super high this year if I'm the Giants, but you are not an Eli Manning believer, and you see that career arc ending. So,
well, in point of fact, he held that team back last year. So if you see yourself as a championship caliber defense and the surrounding town on offense is right there too, it makes sense for some protection in a Jimmy G kind of way, where if your quarterback goes sideways, not only are you protected, if he gets hurt, you're protected, but an extended slump you might have to turn to somebody.
I think you got to get in front of it. You can't wait. You can't wait around till the point where you need a quarterback, because then you're the Browns or the Texans or the Bears paying too much for Mike Glennon or the Rams giving up way too much for Jared Goff. I think quarterbacks are so much more valuable than the entire rest of the team that what the Patriots have done, maybe it'll start a trend. Like, they've taken 3 guys in the first 3 rounds during the last, 7 or 8 years, Mallett, Garoppolo, and Brissett. And that's the way to do it. You got to plan ahead. And it's okay if you blow on the pick.
Ooh, slice me off a piece of that Jake Brisket.
It's
you blow on a lot of picks. You blow on half. You mess up half your picks anyways. So if you have a 1 in 3 chance of finding a quarterback that you end up really liking, like a Jimmy Garoppolo, those guys are so valuable that the Patriots won't even trade him away.
That's why I think that the Steelers, it makes a lot of sense for them as well to make a move here, because nobody was buying into Ben Roethlisberger retiring this year, and he probably won't retire next year, and he might not even retire the year after that. But you know, it's good to have somebody waiting in the wings, somebody you can develop. So if you can trade up, let's say if the Steelers traded up into the top of the second round and got one of these, like one of the first quarterbacks off the board, I don't think it means that the Steelers think it's that Big Ben's going to follow through on his threat. I think they're being smart, just like the Patriots are smart, and they're reaping the benefits of that.
My only caution is that it was accepted months ago that there just is not a premier quarterback in this draft on any level. And good teams should just draft quarterbacks. Bad teams should draft quarterbacks every year. I'd be fine taking a quarterback every season for the sake of, you never know when you're going to hit on someone up in the middle rounds. But the idea that Rivers, Manning, and Big Ben, who all were picked in the top 11 picks in 2004, and it should have been 1, 2, and 3 if you look what's happened, that, give me a break, there's not an obvious heir apparent to these guys. It's, no. still, it's still a complete
Nobody
question
knows,
mark.
Though.
Yeah, it might not be a first-round
but
pick.
Next year's class has this point seems much, much deeper. And
Garoppolo
right.
was a late second-round pick. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, Andy Dalton was a second-round pick. I think it could be a third-round pick. Maybe it's not even the top names that we're hearing about. I think it's just – just start making some investments.
What you said wasn't exactly what we heard about the quarterbacks. It wasn't that there weren't any good ones. It was that the best quarterbacks are not ready to play right now. So in that sense, I think it makes a lot of sense for a guy who's got talent but won't be ready to play for a couple of years. It does make sense for these teams.
I have no problem swinging on a quarter like it over and over and over. That position should be as deep as you can make it, but I don't think any of these teams are saying the heir apparent is here. And maybe that's not the argument. But
I guess the counter to that is just because people are talking at this stage that there isn't a franchise quarterback in this group of names, it doesn't mean that that's true. I mean, that. You never know. If one of these teams trusts their in-house guys and the Steelers have secretly fallen in love with one of these guys or the Giants or the Chargers or whoever, you know. Garoppolo is a perfect example.
More power to him. I'm just saying, if you're looking for someone this year to be the guy, you're in just the same situation as all these teams in the top 5, 6, 7 that probably aren't going to take quarterbacks.
I mean, these teams have to realize, looking at quarterbacks, that those guys don't really happen. And if they do, only the top, you know, two teams get to take them anyways. I mean, even very good rookie quarterbacks like Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, like they could have used – it wouldn't have hurt them, I don't think, necessarily, to sit out their rookie season. It's not like they're lighting the world on fire. And those are the best of the very best.
The whole position could use more patience. I mean, I think we are seeing some bad teams burn through quarterbacks that go on to play – I'm not saying they're starters, but they go on to have 8, 9 more years in the league, and they're mildly productive because – they burnt out as first and second round picks where there's too much pressure, and then coaches are getting fired. Like the whole position, you look at how quarterbacks were groomed 25, 30 years ago, it was completely different.
Greg, what do you want to see?
What I want to see? Yeah, I like running backs. Running backs, fun position to watch.
Yeah, bro.
Makes the team a little more interesting. Yeah, and there's two teams out there picking towards the top of the draft, and I'm not breaking any news here that they might be looking at running back. But what I would really like to see, number one, the Carolina Panthers use their number one pick on a running back. Take off some heat off of Cam Newton. Make that offense more fun to watch. Again, if Leonard Fournette fell there, that just seems like a perfect fit. We don't know if he's going to get that far because the other team that I'm thinking about is the Jacksonville Jaguars. I want to watch these Jaguars. I want them to be fun. And this running back class is great at the top. Fournette could fit in Jacksonville. Maybe it's Dalvin Cook. Maybe it's McCaffrey. I don't really know like how it's going to shake out. But seeing those two of those three names fall to those two teams, I think is going to make those two teams more fun to watch, and especially the Panthers. I'm with you, Wes. You picked them as a potential NFC power sleeper last week, and I think they could get back there with just a couple of fun moves, and this would be one of them.
I'd like to see them trade ahead of the Jaguars. Woo! Take Leonard Fournette.
That would be great.
I love the fit that you got a quality running back in Jonathan Stewart who no longer has big playability. If you start mixing in Leonard Fournette, and now you've got a guy who's compared to a young Adrian Peterson, you're lighting defenses on fire.
I have a hard time disagreeing with the fit. The Panthers absolutely need it, and don't get too smart.
I'll throw in another team, and Greg, you're not going to like to hear this, but you have to understand that it's not personal. We're talking sports. It's not something to take too seriously. Okay? I'm going to preface it. Okay?
Okay.
It's time.
Making eyes at you.
It's time. Oh, is that what that was?
I don't know.
It's time for the Colts to do better than Frank Gore.
Absolutely.
How dare you?
And you want to talk about taking heat off somebody. I talked to Greg in the huddle about this, about how's that Colts O-line going? And like, if you're a Colts fan, you're kind of talking yourself into it a little bit. So, okay, then I won't pound the table for them to get a top tackle, which we might not have any in this draft anyway. So how about the Colts get aggressive? And they've tried before,
Mark, you might remember the Colts trying before to find their solution in the backfield, calling up the Cleveland Browns. That didn't work out with Trent Richardson. But how about they get aggressive, get Fournette in there, let Frank Gore, who had a nice 1,000-yard season but didn't even average 4 yards a carry. Let's be fair, he's 34 years old. And, you know, let's make some magic and give Andrew Luck some help back there. Wes, you had something nice on your paper, too.
I've got McCaffrey to the Colts.
It's coming from a scientist, too, Greg. That's got to bother you.
Frank Gore has had a fine career, but he's a liability at this stage. You need a playmaker.
The L word. Yes.
Well, what he did was help plug a hole that they needed with professionalism and solid production. He should not be their lead running back at this point. Of course, he's 34 years old. What they got out of him last year is a lot better than any of you jackals expected when you were panning that.
I like Sessler getting grouped into this.
And it worked out for them. You know, it worked out fine for them, but I don't have any problem. Yes, he would probably be better off with less carries.
I'd imagine the Colts would fully agree. They can't have big plans for Frank Gore this season.
Right, and their backup right now is who?
Robert Turbin.
So,
trust the Colts with anything?
I do trust their
Chris Ballard.
Ballard, I think, has a much better take on what to do with this team.
He's got something.
What does that mean?
Give him a chance. I like what we've seen out of old Ballard so far.
Oh, yeah? Does that include what you saw at the combine?
I'm saying
he's got a cotton candy machine.
I like his moves.
What
I like
does
his
that
moves
mean?
So far. I don't know what is happening. And who knows with these running backs? Part of the reason I thought of the Jaguars was because I was watching some TJ Yeldon tape for a piece. Yeah. And he was supposed to be someone that was like, oh, that's the safe running back. Like, you know, plug and play. Maybe he's not great, but that's the safe running back. So you never know with these guys.
I gotta
get rid of him.
I'll throw one out there. And I want to, you know, I'm gonna talk about my team. And the New York Jets, you know, they have not taken a player on offense in the first round since 2009. Mark Sanchez, number 5 overall. They traded up to get Mark, and it looked like it was going to work out for a couple of years, and then it did not. And ever since then, every single year, they have gone defense, 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 which, you know, tells you a lot about their internal structuring, that they now, after 8 straight years of doing that, they don't have a great defense, and their offense is stripped bare. So that's why, and I loved when Move the Sticks brought it up as a possibility on Path to the Draft recently.
I'm not going to be ignored, Dan.
Pipe down, Daniel. The idea of O.J. Howard, the Alabama tight end, to the Jets with the 6th overall pick, and that is the area where Howard's going to go. He's going to go top 10, it sounds like. And if you watched him at all, and my watching of him extended not further than the college football playoffs, but I could tell you that this is exactly the type of game changer that the Jets desperately need right now, especially after they got rid of Brandon Marshall. And I think Eric Decker is going to go too. The way, if you read the tea leaves about where this team is going and where Decker probably wants to go in his age 31 season, the Jets need to start building around somebody. They're going to, in an ideal world, I think the Jets play things conservatively at the quarterback position this year. We've talked about that, scan for Sam and looking ahead to a better draft class. But while you're doing that, while you're waiting there patiently, you could start to build the offense and getting O.J. Howard at tight end, an offensive player at a position the Jets have ignored like no other team, maybe in NFL history in the last couple of years. Chan Gailey had no need for a tight end, historically low levels of production in recent years. Get Howard in there, start remaking this offense, and you get a top-flight tight end, and away they go.
You are right about ignoring the position. I looking up and down the tight end rosters of every single team, I can't find one with a worse lineup than the Jets. With 3 guys that I would say, outside of us, Austin Seferian Jenkins, who flamed out in Tampa Bay, 3 other guys who have no name recognition at all. Right. The average fan would never have heard of the other 3 tight ends they had.
And for a year it worked, by the way. The Jets had, I think, 6 catches total at a tight end in 2015, and they were a top 10 offense in the whole league. But then when things didn't click the way they were hoping last year, it once again was, it seemed like they were playing in another generation with one hand tied behind their back. I like that one.
I believe that would be the highest a tight end has been drafted since the Browns drafted Kellen Winslow over Big Ben 13 years ago. And before that, I don't think there
about
was
about Vernon Davis.
Where did he go?
6, I think.
Okay.
But he was right. He was a year or two after Winslow. You're absolutely right. When was the last time a tight Ebron went 10th? But the last 2 years, is it? Like, there hasn't been any tight ends that people are getting excited about. For a tight end to have this much hype, you know he's got to be pretty excited.
And the tight end is one position where we've done this with making the leap and other stuff where year one often does not go well for tight ends. You're not going to get production. But that may have even worked for the Jets to some degree. You don't have your quarterback yet. You've got no rush. You've gutted everything. He has a little time to grow. You have a time to get your next quarterback in there, and then the production will grow with the quarterback. But if everything goes well, this is the Jets, so we have no knowledge of that.
When they bring back Geno.
He is the answer in New York after Eli, by the way. Mark, why don't you talk about your favorite team?
Well, they're on the ropes with that title because there are reports now that, well, no, I am genuinely annoyed with what's coming out. And
we believe that.
Barring it being some sort of strategy to confuse teams, which I just simply don't believe it is, Adam Schefter reporting yesterday that the Browns are – he's being told they're no lock to take Myles Garrett at number one, that there's argument inside the building, an argument inside the Browns front office or inside the complex in Cleveland has been an ongoing theme for two decades at this point. So it's tiresome to anyone that is latched onto that club on any level. And listen, at the owners' meetings, Hugh Jackson came out strongly in favor of taking Myles Garrett. It's just one of these home run picks. And if you get it wrong, nobody can blame you for taking Myles Garrett. It is a head and tails above the rest type of athlete. And you don't mess around. You don't get too smart. And you have to wonder where the opposition's coming from. Is it the front office that's thinking too hard about taking a quarterback? Well, I was just talking with Connor Orr downstairs, who is a Browns fan as well. Right? You passed up on Carson Wentz last year, who was an ideal quarterback, I thought, for the AFC North. So your answer this year would be to come back around and skip on Myles Garrett and say what? You take Mitch Trubisky, who is a much lesser, I'd say, prospect than Carson Wentz. What are you doing at that point? You cannot outsmart yourself. You have got to take this player and never look back. And you know what? I don't even think you have to go quarterback at number 12. You take Garrett, and then you go get the best safety available, the best other defensive player. Start to build a defense that Greg Williams can build around. How do you tell the Greg Williams, who you pulled to Cleveland, we are passing on Myles Garrett potentially for one of these quarterbacks? You know I don't believe in any of these quarterbacks personally to go number one overall. Nobody does. DJ doesn't even have one in his latest mock.
He's
going
not alone.
Until number 25.
Nobody in the first round, a lot of experts.
It's just an unbelievable – you have the ammunition. You got all this ammunition. You can't keep all these draft picks. Then you move up from number 12 to number 5 or number 4 if you want to get a quarterback then ahead of, in theory, the Jets. That's your one issue. Absurdity.
I agree totally, Mark, and I had that written down as well. Don't blow this, Browns. I know they are feeling good about themselves right now after the Osweiler trade and some of the positive buzz that brought about how they're different thinking than everyone else. But, geez, if this guy's as good as everyone says he is, and if you do that, if you get cute and you go analytics and you trade out of that pick and then Myles Garrett turns into like a J.J. Watt-level disruptor, how could you be a Browns fan?
Come in off the ledge, Browns fans. This is lying season, smokescreen season, posturing season. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm believing every rumor about what the Browns plan to do at number one when the obvious move is probably the one that's going to happen.
Well, I hope you're right, and you're right that it's not time to overreact. That's how I'm built with this team, but – it is the first hint that we've heard of discord between – true discord between the coach and the front office, and you have to ask where that came from. Adam Schefter is talking to someone, and it's not people outside the team, I would imagine. That's not where his sourcing
is. That would be the biggest concern for me because Mike Silver tweeted about that. He kind of tweeted around it, but he said he didn't buy the presumption that Hugh wants a quarterback. And obviously Mike Silver, if you don't watch NFL Network, is known to be very tight with Hugh Jackson. So he's kind of putting it out there that it's not necessarily Hugh that wants the quarterback. And they have that number 12 pick. I mean, to me, the ideal situation is if you really do like Trubisky, you sit there. You might not have to trade up. You just sit there and take
him at 12. Absolutely.
And Wes is absolutely right. It is lying season. But Mark and Browns fans, and frankly, anyone else that follows the game closely, knows that the Browns know how to mess things up.
They overthink this
stuff. So when you see a report like this, you think to yourself, yeah, this could be a smokescreen, but this is the Browns, and it makes you think.
It made me think, are they trying to get, San Francisco, who's at 2? Mm. Have they, there's been
I thought the same
talk about maybe they like Trubisky, and they're trying to get them to just move up one pick. Who knows?
This might be the most upset I've seen Mark about the Browns since they refused to sign Chris Carter's son.
Well, look, when you're at the bottom of the league, you're looking for anything. I'm trying to do anything to get the team a spark, especially when your best wide receiver can't stay on the field, can't stay in the NFL.
How about when?
I mean, Mark was on point with that. They ended up going 1-15 after passing up on Daron
That's
Carter.
That's true. That was 2 seasons ago.
And also, I will say the most anger I've seen Mark about the Browns was after they won their game.
Well, and you know what? It's a lesson that, hey, so you get the number one pick and you have a chance. Like I said, maybe it's not a quarterback, but a generational talent at number one. And now, had they been at number two and someone else took Myles Garrett, and you get that there's other good players, but you get the number two, you're wondering what Myles Garrett will become. If you're at one and you pass on him, what is happening here? What is happening with this team?
This isn't Eric Fisher and Luke Jokel trying to decide who to take number one. Apparently, this dude is nasty.
There's two more weeks. Just figure it out. Get your headspace together, people, and get this thing done. I don't care if there's debate in the building, but give me a break.
Sashi.
You threatened belligerent activities upon this organization
in
our meeting.
What I threaten is total ambivalence.
We can't even read the quote that Mark uttered in the production meeting.
Well, that's something I would say to anything all the time. I said I would – the second comment, I said I would drop kick someone in the face. So if that happens, you better want to be sitting near me when that pick goes
Sashi,
down.
Do not listen to Bill Barnwell.
Sashi.
He is a respected writer. I love reading his stuff, but don't do it.
I like all these guys. Get it together and make the right pick. I like Sashi. Good. I like Hugh Jackson. Just get it done.
It's not good when, you know, Bill Barnwell, who were fans, have had to, you know, release a Twitter statement saying, "I do not work for the Browns."
I mean,
after some outrageous, silly speculation by a fellow ESPN employee.
It's too much. It's too much for many of these fans to bear at this point. If this doesn't go well, you're going to start. This is a very loyal fan base. There's two other good teams in that town. Attention's going to start to go elsewhere.
All right. We good? All right. Hey, we said on the beginning, I believe, of Wednesday's show, or Monday's show, I should say, that there was some controversy during WrestleMania 3. And it revolved around cornhole. And I didn't want to bring up the person by name because it was so hot. It was so controversial. And frankly, some people would call it deplorable what happened on the boards. But then this individual, Wes, approached you privately in the office today. And what happened? Without naming names yet.
He approached me and said that if we wanted to have him on the podcast to discuss the incident heard around the competitive sports world, the competitive parlor games world, he would be happy to come in and speak about it with us.
The corn toss heard around the world. And now here he is. He's behind the glass. He put on the headset. He took Sid's headset, a headset he's familiar with because he is the producer of the Fantasy Live podcast here at NFL.com. He is Alex Gelhar. Alex, welcome to the Around the NFL podcast.
Thank you for having me here. It is good to be here, but I believe you changed the name of the play in question from Saturday.
What was it on?
Was Saturday? It not the shot not heard around the world?
All right. So let me give a little background on the throw. So it was corn. It was Wes and I facing off against Alex Gelhar and John Gonzalez.
Who is? Greg?
I don't. Who is that guy? I don't know that guy.
Mark.
The husband of Connie Fox.
Yeah. And a talented writer in his own right.
Absolutely.
And all that. Anyway, so Wes and I had jumped out to an 18-6 lead, game to 21. But in cornhole, if you know the game, it's not over till it's over. And Alex was making his final throw of the round. I believe there were 3 Chris Wessling bags circling the hole, and there was a Alex Gelhar bag that was kind of on the lip of the hole. And this is Wes. Now I'll throw it to
half
you.
In.
It half was half in. In. Wes, I'll throw it to you in terms of strategy here. What was the right play for Alex facing a 12-point
deficit? Need to mention I had 2 in the hole already, too.
Right.
So.
This is what really got me hot and bothered. First of all, one of my primary cornhole philosophies is you never worry about the other guy's back. you're good enough that you can hit your own bag in. And Alex's bag was right on the lip, right in the right-hander's alley. So where he, if he hits it in the right angle, he can get four in the hole, which we call a Jumanji.
Right.
Which puts you in that day's Hall of Fame for cornhole. You don't see a Jumanji every day in cornhole. All four bags in the hole. Not only
you don't
do
see
you,
a that day Hall of Fame too often.
Not only do you woodshed me on that throw, you get a Jumanji and put you and your teammate right back in the game. To me, it was the only throw you could possibly make.
And just to set it up one more time, 18-6. Let's assume, I don't remember, but let's assume Wes had one in the hole and three on the board. If Gelhard Jumanji's there, 4 times 3 is 12 points, 4 8-point differential.
Well,
and all of a sudden,
it would have been a 6-point differential because he had three on the board and one in.
Right.
So if I hit it perfectly, we gained 6.
Now you're 18-12.
Now you're 18-12. Right. So what happens? Gelhard, Gelhard tosses the bag
like 10 feet away from the board.
10 feet away to the board, and then shakes his head. He goes, "Nah, it was not going
to
risk it."
Now. I have to say, in the moment,
the world exploded at that moment.
I defended the move because Gonzo
did.
And I, we played you guys in a tough game one.
Yes.
And we were in this one. Gonzo was starting to get his throw. I had just hit it. I didn't want to risk it because, well, Wes said, had I hit it perfectly, could have Jumanji would have been great. But you guys were also sitting at 18. If I hit it improperly, we lost. However,
this is all.
No. That was
details matter. None of these details matter.
I
what kind of life do you want to live? Do you want to live a life where you just throw the bag off to the side? Oh, I'll see you later. I'll just lose by a little less. What kind of life is that?
It's not a good one, let me tell you. In the days since WrestleMania,
right?
Because
what's going on since then?
Well, no. As I've thought about it, Dan aptly described it as Mike McCarthy in Seattle. So I've had to relive that horrific game as a Green Bay fan every day. It's also akin to Andy Reid taking a fourth quarter timeout with roughly 5 or 6 minutes left in the game that he may or may not lead.
Yet another
later.
Comparison, Donovan McNabb throwing up on the field at the Super Bowl.
So what it was is I was realizing, you know, and it goes against all of my philosophies. I was on the road against an elite opponent, one who was better than me. I should have taken the chance. I should have gone for the win. But, you know, when you're in the moment, when you're coaching on the field, it's a little different than when you're watching the game from the comforts of the NFL newsroom. So my heart goes out to those coaches in those times, but I should have made the throw.
Are you a little concerned? And it sounds like this has appropriately, you know, caused some self-reflection. Are you at all concerned that this was a La Raville Magnifica?
No. I don't think it was. I think I overestimated.
So not a lot of self-reflection.
No, there was. There was a lot. But as I said, it was
Alex,
a momentary
you can go ahead
lapse.
And hit the La Raville Magnifico.
I'll hit it. Well, this board is a mess.
Hands are tied.
There it is. This
you know
is a
what's going on.
Much more intense board than what we have.
Well, I would just like to let the record show that this was never Monday morning quarterbacking. There was outrage on the spot. I believe I threw my hat down and started jumping on it.
Oh, yeah. It was
Greg
it was widespread.
As hot and bothered as anybody watching. Yeah.
It was widespread.
That was very
and it makes you feel better. I don't even remember when this happened, and I had a delightful time.
I mean, true to form with all those coaches that we've compared it to as well, Gonzo and I did mount somewhat of a comeback, but we ultimately lost, you know.
Mm. You did. And that almost makes it a little more painful in a way because – had you maybe been aggressive and then got hot, you could have stole the game. But instead, when you got hot, you were still down 3 or 4 points.
Exactly.
And then we closed that. But I'll tell you what. You were, and that made it more fun, frankly, you were adamant that you had been strategizing properly when you decided to throw the ball
bag out of bounds. Too risky!
In my defense, too,
it wasn't risky. That's
While it was a much more measured WrestleMania, as you said, Matt Harmon and I had come from L.A. Beer Fest beforehand downtown. So
also, I believe you were out throwing me for most of the day.
I had been, at least in the first game. I think you overtook me in the second game.
So my point is that you have now come around and you understand the foibles. And I believe that you are a very good player, Alex.
I would
put you a little bit behind myself.
I would put myself behind you as well.
But that is not a shot. I think you're well ahead of anyone else. I think you are firmly in the top three now. And what we need is a true fourth.
I have to say, I wanted to take this chance to apologize to Gonzo. Hopefully he hears this part of the podcast when Colleen's getting ready in the morning.
He was shook like Cam Newton last year.
He was Gonzo had some good tosses in that day, you know.
He did.
We at least kept those games competitive with you guys.
That's fair. Apologies to
Gonzo. He was pretty much like the Packers defense watching, going, what is this guy doing?
Gonzo wakes up every morning, he told me this, at about 11:30 a.m., and then a few hours later takes a nap. He is doing fine. He could care less about any of these parlor game intrigues.
Yeah. He's got dogs, not kids. It's a nice life that Gonzo's carved out for himself in Southern California. All right, Alex, that was good. That was good to talk it out.
I felt the listeners knowing how much they care about WrestleMania. I mean, we had somebody show up 1 year to WrestleMania. I felt they should know the truth. And being the one on the opposite side of that, I thought I should come in and explain myself and how I've been, I've been like Mike McCarthy sipping coffee at Lambeau Field every day after, wondering if I screwed it up.
A stand-up guy. Alex Gelhar.
Absolutely.
And we look forward to the next time we can get on the boards and see what's the next chapter in a budding rivalry, potentially. I'm excited.
I like this.
All right. That's it. That's it for today's show. We'll be back on Thursday with a video show. Make sure you check it out, streaming 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We will also have another guest coming in on Thursday. We're going to have a lot of fun. So check out the video show, and the audio show will land as well. And that's it. We got to go. We got to do a network hit. So it's time to say bye.
Streaming at 9 p.m. Eastern.
I already said that.
So much responsibility on the listener.
Dan Hans is signing off for the Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, New Money, and Gelhar behind the glass. Till Thursday.